Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Project Egg Show. I'm your host, Ben Gothard, and today we have the honor of speaking with Andrew Faradani. How you doing today, Andrew?
Very good, Ben. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you carving out the time, and I am very excited with your camera situation going on right here. For those of you who are on audio, it's very high tech. We get a 360 view of the whole conference room. Beautiful, really, really cool. So anyways, Andrew, that's the first time we've ever had anything like this on the show. You and I were talking a little bit about that earlier. So we're already making history on the show. Anyways, I want to jump into it. I want to know, what is your story?
Sure. I mean, very long story short. I went to the schooling world in a university not far from here called York University, where I studied kinesiology and health sciences, and loved it. Used to work in the hospital, the Back Institute, and a friend of mine, a very intelligent guy, actually, went to MIT, got headhunted to go to Cisco Systems, and then was again headhunted to go to a little company in the early 2000s called Google. So he called me up because, listen, I've just been through this program. It's incredible, this company. We're part of something magical here. In the future, if you do anything with business, definitely associate yourself with this company with some form or other, because they're going to be a big hit in the future. At that time, another friend of mine contacted me from Europe and said, listen, Andrew, come on out of Manchester. We've got a web conferencing company we're going to launch. It's a cool thing. You get to see people around the world. You get to hear their voice and see the picture. You see their screen even. I was like, wow, that's incredible. Now it's the norm, as we are on a call right now. So I went there, early 2000s. We did phenomenally well. We launched into 15 European cities, and I utilized Google Ads to acquire customers, digital ad campaigns that were running. I learned the platform off of a $99 PDF, and then very quickly expanded our business to the point where we sold out the technology rights to a much, much larger outfit. At that point in time, shifted my idea, and I said to myself, listen, if I helped our startup do so well, why don't we just help other companies, SMB segment, to capitalize on digital advertising for their own businesses? We launched that in Europe. It did phenomenally well. And then I brought it back to North America. I'm from Toronto, Canada, in early 2007. And then as an entity, launched it into the corporate world in 2008. And ever since then, we went from one product with one person to over 20 different product streams that we cater to, over 100 staff catering to North America and European clients.
So if that's the short version, what's the long version?
There's a lot of ups and downs in that long version, a lot of failures, a lot of successes, a lot of pivotal turning points. I would say the biggest point for us was in 2010. We were growing, and then, I don't know if I can mention publicly their names, but there was a very big book, directory book, and they were buying out another directory book. And when they bought out the other directory book, they let go of a lot of very good salespeople. And for me, it was the right product and the right time and a bit of luck. So the luck factor was a big consortium was being bought out. Their best reps across the country were being let go. And I literally cherry picked the best of the best in every city. And I acquired them because all we were doing is taking existing advertisers from a paper advertisement into a digital form. So they had the belly-to-belly interactions. They knew who their clients were. They knew their behaviors. They knew all about them. And it basically was a matter of converting their paper ads to the digital format. And, right place, right time. We got on board with the best people that they had. And then we've started actually doing very, very well ever since 2010 and upwards. And, their demise was our success story, quote unquote, because of the fact of the right place, right time. And plus, our product was not a fad that a lot of people thought it would be in the 2006-07. Andrew, this internet thing might come and go. I don't know if I should spend my money on it and advertising. And to what it's become today, it is a necessity, not a luxury anymore. So those little segments and those little milestones were our claim to fame. And over servicing, making sure people get what they pay for is number one within our culture and our company. and you know, under promise over deliver every aspect of our business is what we strive to do.
When you were noticing that all of these phenomenal sales reps were being let go, how did you first recognize it? I mean, I know you talked about it a little bit, but how did you really have your finger on the pulse and recognize it? And what was that action plan? Like when you saw it, what did you then do in order to actually capitalize on it? Because it seems like it's a lot of people and a big initiative in a short amount of time.
Yeah, it's a very big initiative. So a lot of these guys and gals who were best of the best at what they did, unfortunately, because of the purchase was to basically eliminate the competition. That's what the purchase was all about. So when you eliminate the competition, you eliminate a huge facet of that business, which is the actual salespeople. So at that time, we had only 3 salespeople, me being one of them. So we were going through the grind, knocking door to door, belly to belly. It was in the newspapers. It was in the news that this big consortium was being purchased. So when I heard that, my automatic reflex was to provide ads to those specific people who are losing their jobs. So I had literally advertisements out there selling, you know, director sales experts required, directory sales veterans required. I pinpointed my product to where the audience was looking at, which was, you know, several hundred of the best of the best looking for jobs now because they're they work. So being in the know, having your finger on the pulse as to what the environment's all about, and being able to position ads where the highest probable conversions might occur, which is in the demand and the needs element, which is the need for a job, I was able to literally pick up 40 of the best of the best across the nation. And systematically, the training process was only a technical one, not a sales one, because they've been trained by the best of the best. They know how to sell. It's just a matter of realigning them to the digital world, not the paper world. And it took a couple of months of education about our circle of how we do what we do. And then very quickly, you see them flourish. Obviously, they get the nose. Is it a fad? It's not a right place to invest. I don't see it growing. I don't know. I might stick to what I'm currently doing. Those objection handling questions were obviously ascertained, and we got highly educated our sales reps. And the main thing with our program here, what we run still to this day, is educate the sell. So the whole Gary Vee philosophy in our company, we've been doing it for 10 years, is so true. You over-educate the prospect. You give them so much ammunition. You give them a lot of information that they know they can do it themselves if they want to, but then the learning curve is huge, and you're paying for that via your hard-earned dollars. So you want a plug-and-play system where you can continue doing what you're good at, which is your business, and let us worry about the online world. Or you want to learn in your own dime, and you know, when you have time in the evenings and weekends, try to tweak your program. So we lean towards, you know, set and forget it kind of mentality, like business owners. So if I'm not the expert in that area, I want to bring experts on board. Like in our company, I'm not the expert in everything. Absolutely not. I'm actually the opposite. I like to get people who are way better than me to do those menial tasks and the whole segment of things. And they're the experts. Let them do it in the same context as what we do. A lot of business owners, they haven't got the time. And if they haven't got the time, then they want to make sure they get the best bang for their buck. So for us to be able to convey that message, you know, we give them the different elements of an effective campaign. We give them the avenues in which to go about creating these campaigns. We give them everything. It's just now you have to do it. And when it comes to doing it, it's a completely different conversation, right? It's like, I cannot tell you the countless number of times we meet entrepreneurs and business owners who say, my brother's cousin was a web developer, designed my website, and I can't access it now. I don't know how to change the little widget on my site. You know, that conversation, I'm telling you, 90% of the time that I hear it, I kind of cringe, because your digital asset is your storefront in the internet world, which is on 24/7, creating leads, giving you business. So why would you treat it, why wouldn't you treat it the same way as you do your storefront? You know, if people are coming to your store and buying elegant, let's say, jewelry, you don't want to have a second grade, second class kind of a website in the internet world. It's not going to get you success. So, you know, put your time, effort, energy. This segment is where the population will be visiting 24/7. And sometimes we don't even get off our couches. We get our mobile devices and we search things while sitting there watching a TV commercial or something. So when you explain that to people, they understand the importance of what we're doing. And once they understand the importance of what we're doing, it's just a value proposition. You have to add value to what you state and deliver on the words that you mentioned in that meeting. So I'm going to do those two things in our business, especially because it is a cutthroat business. I'm not going to kid you. It's not easy. A lot of competitors are out there. And you got to differentiate yourself, right? You have to make sure you're on time. You have to make sure that you're customizing these products for these individuals. In our firm, we don't have an ABC package. Everything is customizable. What you're trying to achieve, or you want, you know, for example, new clients, you want to have more readers in your newsletter. Do you want to have a branding campaign? You have a promotions for Halloween, for example, coming up soon. It's all different. And once you figure out the end goal, which is the objective, you have to work from that point all the way to the beginning. What are we going to do today to give an action plan to make all that happen? And that's how we drive a business forward, is giving each individual company owner a very niche, very sniper approach, I call it. You don't want to throw too many things at the wall and hopefully one of them sticks. You want to find out that one that stuck last time and just keep on putting attention to it. And you know, that's what we reiterate over and over again to our staff here, and top down. We speak the same language. You know, we have to get the message across that, you know, in order to get out there and have a fast start, you got to know what you're doing. And too many times people have wasted so much money doing the wrong things. And we just want to bring to light that, you know, you can learn a lot from our seminars that we do. And also, if you can do it yourself, hats off to you, do it, because it's worth every penny and every minute of attention spent on that. But if you haven't got it, then let's have a chat and we can talk about it. So that's our philosophy anyways.
I love that. And you just dropped so many gems there. There's so many things. No, it's great. It's great. There's so many things to unpack. I'm curious about one specific point of when you were talking about bringing people on and delegating to the experts. And I believe you were saying you're not an expert at everything, and you want to put the people, the right people, in the right place so that they can go on and basically be empowered to run the business. So I'm curious, when you're first building it, you're building your business, you're building your processes, and I'm assuming that you probably hammered out some standard operating procedures, and then you handed those off to the experts to let them kind of take it, tweak it, make it their own. How did you make the transition from, okay, we're building this standard operating procedure, we're pretty sure that it works, and you know, we've tested it, to okay, now let me hand off control to somebody else and let them run with it, and that transition of like releasing your power and giving up a lot of that control, how did that actually go down for you?
Sometimes it went great. Sometimes it went the opposite. I mean, if you're looking at, let's dissect this, in the admin world. Okay. I'm not the best admin person. I can't stand it, to be honest with you. No contracts coming in. We use a platform, as you know, probably Salesforce as our go-to CRM platform, taking a contract, putting it in the system, having processes to double, quadruple check the product that a person purchased, making sure the billing is correct, dated, make sure that billing is doing it, you know, whether it be a credit card transaction or a direct debit account. All the little things I knew very little about. I just knew that we had to get the money through the door. That's it. The need was the cash for cash flow. So I had very broad stroke kind of parameters to be met. Make sure we don't screw up on the data, make sure the money goes through the account, and make sure we provide the service that we guarantee people we provide. So that was my broad spectrum of how I wanted to bring clients on board. So in the beginning, when you have 3 or 4 clients, it could take time. You know, you don't have to worry about so much of processes because you've only got 2 or 3 clients to take care of. But in order to grow a company, in order to have a serious growth, that particular 3-step process became a 30-step process with quality assurances happening on an ongoing basis. So when I brought people in for the admin side of our business, I knew very little. I knew the simplistic formats of what should be done. Mm-hmm. The experts who I brought in, who have been doing that task for 5 to 8 years with other companies that had that kind of flow of business. And again, I hired people that were had experience in exactly the field that I needed their expertise in, albeit not in the digital world, it was in the paper world, but it was the same job. The end result is success for the customer, and it starts with an application with monies being involved. So they knew the processes that had to be done. So in the admin world, as an example, for me, it was very easy to listen to people who had far more expertise than me and to tell them, listen, guys and gals, this is the objective here. This is A, this is Z. In these two areas is your expertise. You tell me what I should do to make this thing fail-proof, completely encrypted, completely sealed to the world. And they sat down and they told me, you know, they had several meetings in a couple of days and ironed out the flow before we had the volume of business that we have today. And it was a great thing because for once we had the opportunity to do something at the beginning stages when there's a little number of clients and little variables to make sure we refined it to where we're onboarding, you know, 10, 20, 30 clients a week, we don't have that same problem. Because onboarding, you know, two clients in 5 months is different than onboarding 30 in a week, right? So those experts gave me the guidelines as to what I should and shouldn't be doing in that funnel to get from A to Z. So there were, that's where I had to really trust the people I hired. I had to really give them the leadership role to guide me in this area of the business. And, you know, luckily, we brought on board some great people, and to this day, almost a decade into it, they're still here with us. They stuck around because of the fact that they knew our vision, they knew our goals, and they saw the progression of growth. For example, we moved from a small little office to a mid-sized office and to one now that holds approximately 60 people in this location, let alone another location that we have. So for us, it was an element of trust factor and not micromanaging these people who are better than me. Who am I to micromanage someone who knows better than me? You know, I don't profess to be brilliant at many things, although I'm good at probably a handful of things, but not everything. So let them be the expert. Now, the flip side, in our sales world, I got trained by some of the best salespeople in the UK who are absolutely formidable in what they do. They were the best of the best. And I got trained by them. So when I started hiring salespeople, I had my protocols that I knew very well of how to deploy and educate my salespeople. Like one huge thing was my overall conversion metrics. You know, I wanted to know every single Monday how many people you spoke to, how many meetings you had, presentation pitches, how many agreed, disagreed, how many signed up, how many paid in. Those six areas gave me the overall conversion metrics of that sales rep. And every Monday I knew where to hit that person. Because if he had 10 meetings, sorry, if he pitched five people and he had two meetings, let's say, and he made one sale, that's a pretty good, very efficient sales rep. But you should be talking 20, 30, 40, 50 people. You know, closing 5, 10, 15 if you want to go at this the way you should be going at it. So having the overall effectiveness spreadsheet as an example taught me of pinpointing every rep's deficiencies, what they did right, what they did wrong. If you were closing 50% and you had 5 appointments, what if you had 20? What if you had 30 that week, right? And we ran our business to this day on a week-by-week, Monday-to-Monday cycle. And you're only as good as your last week's results in our books. So you got to produce, you got to run around, you got to show that you really want it, because ultimately you're in sales for one thing. In my opinion, A, provide a class A service. Therefore, the referrals come to you. You don't have to run around chasing sales. If you do a good job and you say what you deliver what you say you're going to deliver, they'll come to you. And number two, the unlimited income potential of a sales rep in any vertical, right? You're given a base and you can make whatever you want from it as long as you hustle. And this is what I did. No, I'm nothing special. I didn't even come from this world. I come from like the medical world, which is a completely opposite of this. So if I can learn, I think people that are in sales, all they have to do is fine tune one element of their pitch or sales cycle and to monetize a hell of a lot more than what they're currently doing today. So our big thing to this day is we analyze every week our flow, our forecasts, you know, our last week's results, and we compare it year over year, quarter over quarter, week on week. That portion of it, we didn't release too much because I knew what to do there. So I was the expert, I was training them, and this is what we were going to do. And to this day, we're still doing that. But in other departments, other experts told me what to do. And luckily, brought the right people on board, and they directed us in the correct manner. And, you know, without them, we would not be here today. And to this day, I thank them. You know, if it wasn't for them, we would not be here and we would not be succeeding while others are closing shop and, you know, going bankrupt.
That makes so much sense of delegating the things that you're not an expert in, and then being, it seems like you're still somewhat in the trenches as far as the sales piece, because that is your area of genius. And it would seem like you have your protocol, you have your flow, your system there. So my question is, at what point would it make sense for you to hand that off, if ever? I mean, in my mind, it seems like the ultimate goal is to have the company run without you, so that, you know, you can go hike the Appalachian Trail and 8 months later come back and it's the business has grown, right? So like,
right. So like
when you're handing off that piece, how do you, and I understand the codification process of like writing it down and scripting it out and having it very tight. I understand that. But as far as like handing the reins to somebody where you may be the best person to do that, I mean, you may just be from a skill-wise level, the best at that particular thing. What does that look like for you? What are your thoughts there of actually getting to that place?
Great point, Ben. Great point. So I have actually done that. Here's a very simple answer to that question. When I see somebody who can talk the talk, walk the walk, and do exactly how I am, like duplicate me, is when I decide to put my focus on other areas to build a business. I you know, whether it be a larger corporation we speak to one-on-one basis, going for the larger entities that we want to be at and do work for. I think it's always got to be the right place, right time. So for me, it was when this person was duplicating what I was saying, doing exact same metrics of result oriented and presenting, again, throw me the trenches, let them go and let them do, and let me observe as a user here. I'm going to sit down and listen to this presentation, what's happening. And when I sat down and when I heard what was being said, it was like looking at somebody else talking as if they were me. When that happens and the habits are passed on, there's no issue in passing a torch, so to speak, because now it's the replication of you. And I think in business, the business owners, the hardest thing we always look to do is having ourselves duplicated. If we can have 10 of me in this office, how much faster, how much larger could we have been? That's the hardest part of any business, and it's very difficult to do. But once you do it, if there's one person that can duplicate you, you have to give them the reins and you have to let them run with it and let them succeed or let them fail. If they've shadowed you, they can duplicate what you've done. So luckily for my situation, it has already been done. About 3 years ago, that was the case where I actually let go of my reins in that aspect of things. I ran the side of, you know, larger client acquisition meetings, and, you know, I'd rather be in the meetings where there's a lot more money riding on different pitches and RFPs being submitted than doing the sales routine, for example, the trainings and mentoring and development. So when I saw myself being replicated is when I say, you know what, I think it's time. Let this person rise and shine and let them do it. And it empowers them. It made them far better, a lot more respected in that entire community of salespeople. And then promotion, I think, is the key to any kind of a sales-driven organization. It's actually a lot more powerful than just money, because money drives people to get the materialistic things of life and to make life more easier for them and family. But having that particular promotion in that you are the best of the best, that everyone looks forward to listening to you speak all across the country. We have people in the office and through web conferencing coming into our Monday morning routines where we listen, our new material being delivered, new techniques, the highs, the lows, the good, the bad, the ugly. And when you're in charge of that, that's a completely different feel and vibe. Like, you know, you've done the right job and you can go home at night and sleep and know that you've earned what you've made last week. So yeah, for me, it was a great thing to have. And I think any organization that can do that and duplicate that particular person who's in charge of sales and training and mentoring, the greatest accomplishment for any person is to have somebody else do what they were doing and replace them without any hindrance to the company. Right. Nothing changes, everything is good, and you can do more with your time now. And that was my luck of the joy. I hit the hell on the head there. It was very successful for me to do that, and I felt very excited. And because the company as itself was evolving, and we could put more attention to bigger things now. So that was my example.
So it seems like you want to basically go out and recruit champions. I mean, just total studs to come in, and you want to teach them and let them shadow you and give them a complete overview of every single part of the process to the point where they are doing it just as well, if not better than you are. And once they have reached that level of like, you don't see any difference in result from you doing it versus them doing it, then you give it to them. You give them the keys of the kingdom and you're off to the races onto the next thing. So my question there is, how do you plan out that roadmap of what you're going to go to next? Like, let's say you take care of the sales thing. I recognize it's a very ambiguous term, but just for the sake of the question, you take care of sales, then you go hit marketing, then you go hit HR, so on and so forth, all of your zones of genius. How do you plan out and prioritize which one needs to get done first?
Great question. So cash flow to any business is king. Without that, you have no business. So you take care of first base, which is, are the sales coming in? If I leave this position, will the sales still come in? That for me was number one. If I can sustain that, then I think the gas pedal off and I apply to other areas of refinement. That was my first stage. My second stage was reoccurring revenue, how to keep them. Because it's a lot easier to upsell existing customer than get a new customer. And it's very easy to lose a customer if they're not happy. So first one was the money coming in. Second one was to keep the money that's in, i.e. the recurring revenues, make clients happy. You know, I'm simplifying everything because I think it has to be simplified to be effective. So first one, make sure that's boxed off. Second one was when they're in, we make them happy. Beef up our backend, our customer relation, customer servicing side, our account managers, beef it up. Make sure they are keeping who is in our program alive and they're doing very well at it. And everything else came into different buckets. You know, my HR position, I didn't have an HR person because we didn't need one back then, right? We didn't have a CFO. We didn't need one back then. So all those other peripheral positions, you know, department heads. Well, if you got two people in a department, why do I have to have a department head? You know, when you have 12, 13, 14, 15 people, yes, you need department heads to convey the message across the board so everyone understands what their roles and responsibilities are. So for me, it was a simple, logical way of looking at it. Money coming in, make that duplicatable. Keep the money in, keep that duplicatable. And then from that point on, logically speaking, let's beef up all the departments, all the different product lines, the creative department, the ad deployment, the analytic department, the video department, the content writers, make sure they're all taken care of, and make sure the admin is beefed up as well, because now we have more clients, we can't falter on the admin side. Then we need a role to oversee all of these individuals. And then you have the head of each department, then you have an office manager, then you've got the HR department that needs now to be instilled into this organization, because we have, obviously, working North America, and there's rules and regulations that you have to abide by. So I think systematically, we very quickly saw what needed to be improved. And ultimately, if you're at any moment in time, something happens that triggers us to focus on that department, of course, that becomes priority, right? If we're seriously faltering in one area, I'm not saying this is how it is for everybody. For our organization who is in the digital ad space, this is the flow that we have to cater to. Every company has their own ways of doing things, but for us, it worked out very well. And we sustained the steady growth we've had over the last 10 years in a very competitive, very cutthroat business, because we're not only in competition with other companies in our city, in our province or state or country,
we're in competition
versus the world, right? You go over the seas and you can find companies do what we do, and one-tenth the price. You get value for what you pay, in my opinion. And having the person face to face, you meet you at a Starbucks or something to have a conversation about your business, come to our office, for example, you have to value that. And that, you know, unfortunately, a lot of SMBs, they look at the bottom price. You offer something for $1,000, I can get it from overseas for $100. You know, you have to tell them, you know, you're going to kind of regret that decision because you're going to get what you pay for. And we're trying to call them and it's their morning, it's your night, you can't get a hold of anybody, you've lost your passwords for all your admin logins and stuff, and you know, who you're going to come calling, crying to? Not us, right? So you get what you pay for, in my opinion, and that's how I treat not my business, but my own self. I get what I pay for, right? And when I look at service providers, any vertical, whether it be from CRM programs to merchant account facilities, you get what you pay for. And that's how we dissected our program here in the last decade to orchestrate a proper growth, a systematic growth and a scalable growth. So we're not shooting ourselves in the foot by going all in on something that we shouldn't be going all in and missing other opportunities as well.
So now that it seems like you kind of have a roadmap and you have the right people in place and it seems like it's very, there's a good flow to it. At this point, what do you focus on? What's your day-to-day?
So great questions. The number one focus right now for our company as a whole is the AVO of our customers to be a lot larger. So we help a lot of SMBs get success who are in the small to medium-sized bracket. Now we want to pay close attention to the larger organizations because virally and through the word of mouth and referrals, we're getting a lot of businesses referring their you know, cousin's company, their uncle's company coming to us, which is great. My focus right now is a larger ticket item companies, how we can scale our services to the larger entities that are now knocking on our door. Meanwhile, 3-4 years ago, it would have been in my dreams to even think about the conversations with these people, right? It would have never happened. So the entire corporate structure right now is built towards over-servicing so that we do get these referrals coming in. And our salespeople, their mandate is to target larger organizations to get more creative, more exciting campaigns. As you can probably imagine, when you're dealing with a lot of bigger companies, there's a lot more you can do with it because you just have access to more funds. If you have more money, then you can do a lot more creative things. You know, go out there and push the envelope. With a person who's got a smaller budget, you have to be very careful. You know, they need sales yesterday. So you got to do what you can. Get the low-hanging fruit to make sure they get fed and then build that campaign slowly. But larger ticket, larger corporations, when they have a lot larger advertising budgets, we're able to be more creative in what we do. So the excitement in what we do is that it's something new, something different. My guys and gals who are in the tech department, they love bigger campaigns because they really get to get their creative juices out there, flowing, giving ideas and promoting different products and brands internationally now. Not just in your geo-targeted area, like your city, but now we have campaigns running nationwide and across continents now, which is a complete different ballgame. Very exciting, very challenging, but through the challenging aspect of it, our staff gets buzzed, you know, they come to work on a Monday, can't wait to get into the thick of things. And especially when you see some results coming through the numbers, it just fuels the fire. You just keep on going at it. So that's our main mandate now. Get excited about larger corporations, advertising for them. Let's push the envelope, groundbreaking technologies, and really to open a new chapter on how to take the same service for a small to medium company, but apply it now to the big guys who are not used to that over-servicing, right? They're used to giving to an agency and saying, you know what, you take care of it, set and forget it. But we take that idea of micromanaging the campaigns into the larger corporate world.
So it seems like you're focusing on the next and bigger opportunities so that you can look ahead and you're like, okay, I see the company going this way. I see XYZ opportunities coming up. Okay, I want to go after opportunity Z because that seems like it's the best one for us. So it seems like now it's more strategic planning, identifying opportunities, and making sure you're ready for the future when it comes.
You hit the nail on the head, man. I mean, at the beginning, when you're small, every penny counts. You haven't got time to do that, right? You haven't got the leverage of 60 technicians plus another 20. You don't have that leverage of, let me chart out who I'm going to pitch or call then identify the verticals I want to really focus on. When you're struggling to make sales, you don't care. You'll take it where you can get it. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to feed the people out of your office, have a roof over your head and food in your belly. When you grow to a certain size and you have some time in your hands, you can actually engage the proper way with bigger organizations that you really actually want to do business with. You want to be partners with them. And that leverage, I'll ask you, not a lot of companies have that. The larger ones do. And that's, you know, to scale from, let's say, for example, 10 million a year to 100 million is a lot easier than going from 100,000 to a million. A lot easier. Because now you have the time flexibility to iron out all the little kinks, to pinpoint your market audience, and to really hyper-focus, sniper approach to people you want to do business with. So for us, it's taken us literally a decade, 10 years. Launched a company in 2000, well, not in the corporate structure, off the corporate beam, 2005 we started it in a corporate structure, 2008. So over 11 years it's taken us in the corporate world to have the leverage of time and money to go and look for the companies that we want to partner with, right? Whether it be through an RFP proposal or whether it be through just knocking on their doors. And here's the funniest part of what we do. The biggest corporations, my guys used to always shy from knocking on their door because they thought the firefighter was at the door front and you're going to get blown away and not going to be able to enter the door. Funny enough, the bigger the company, the less door knocking has happened to that entity and less people have gone through those doors. And not all companies of that size have their own in-house departments that take care of everything. So when my guys and gals started knocking on these big, big doors, they were actually surprised that, you know what? I should have come here 5 years ago. They don't have anybody in-house. Why was I scared to knock on their door? It's just the vision that we have, the mental block that they're a big company, they're already taken care of, and let's not bother. And most of the time, we said, you know what? You have an engagement with another company. We'll come back to you next year. And you come back next year, okay, no problem. We'll come back to you next year. And when you come back the fifth year, sixth year, they see that you're still in business. You're taken at a different level. Then the conversation is different. It's not a one that states, you know, are you going to be around next 2 or 3 years and start engaging this program with you? It's more of how we're going to dissect that campaign to make it successful. It's more intriguing, the conversation. So for us, the reality was by knocking on these, you know, larger corporations, we were shocked at first that they were very receptive and open. But you have to understand one thing, with those kind of companies, their due diligence and their overall conversion time is far longer than an SMB. And you know, in the past, we couldn't afford to run after them because it didn't pay the bills and we weren't big enough. But luckily, knock on wood, you know, luck, timing, over-delivering on our service has brought us to where we are today, where we're actually looking very excited to pinpoint those companies and also engage with them and help them out as well.
That's amazing. What an interesting evolution from where you began to where you are now. That's so fascinating.
It's insane. Like, I remember to this day sitting in my basement, one man show, going out to pitch and then getting the contract, excited as hell, you know, just excited, going through the roof in my car. Wow, this is amazing. Coming back, putting on my accounting hat, putting my CRM hat, and then setting up the activation email and then doing the actual work, which is to optimize the campaign and create the ad groups and create the ad copy, and then setting up the receipt when it was done and making sure I didn't screw up on the recurring billing, and then talking back to them and saying, you know what, welcome on board. I envision it being big before I even had one staff. And I think for those that are listening in that are just maybe starting their entrepreneurial lives, I think when you can visualize something, and you know, you've read it to death, we've seen it in all the videos and YouTube here and there, motivational stuff, but I think it's so true. When you actually visualize that one day you're going to be sat at the same table, might be a lot larger, a lot more people than your little desk, and a lot more people helping you to achieve a cause. When you see it, you actually put processes into motion to making it happen. So again, it's not done overnight. Nothing good comes overnight. It takes a long time, a lot of stress, a lot of headache, a lot of weekends working, a lot of nights working. If you can't put the time, don't expect the results kind of a mentality is unbelievably true. And there's a lot of moments in time where you want to just quit. I'm telling you, it's like, you know what, forget it. It's too much work. You know, I just go back to my routine. But, you know, when you push an envelope, sometimes great things happen. And I think when you visualize it, and luckily for me, I brought my brother on board, who I trusted wholeheartedly, of course. Then my wife came on board. Then, you know, I bought an incredible sales guy from the director role that became my top guy, who replicated me. And then from there, you know, just a matter of timing and luck. I have to preface this. Sometimes you need a lot of luck to get you there. And for me, it was a combination of all those.
So on this journey, what have been the most important things you've learned about yourself along the way?
For me, loyalty is number one, I think. I'm such a loyal, like, you know, people that I've purchased before when I was a one-man show, to this day I purchase from, like, and because they've given me the opportunity to succeed. Loyalty is number one in my eyes in business world. Having people that you trust, that when you leave, nothing changes. When you come back, it's as if you weren't there, right? If there's no loyalty in business world that you've created, then I think you can never leave your business. It's like the business runs you. It's a glorified job, which you don't want it to be. So when you can replicate that with the people that are credible, trustworthy, professional, and that you completely get on with, for me, that was a big learning curve in that, you know, give them a chance, let them prove themselves. You know, I give everybody a chance. And you can do great things with that chance, or you can, you know, do unscrupulous things. Again, it's happened before in our company. I mean, in some of our departments, we brought people in. And I'll give you an example. We have brought people in that were working off of the Tool & Die press company that were just, you know, the pick an elevator system where product goes through, all they do is punch it every day. This is all they did, literally for 10 hours a day, right? We brought them in. Are you willing to learn? Yes. You want to have something different, new? Yes. Give them a chance. Train them up. They do amazing, right? We trust them. And then a year later, they go to the biggest ad agency in the world now because they got trained by us. It's happened probably over 20 times in our company where we brought people in, give them a chance. You know, we brought people that were chefs at some, you know, rinky-dink restaurants. We trained them up in this skill set. And the first opportunity they get to go where the bigger dollars are, they go. And that's okay, because ultimately you go through a lot of those numbers to get the refinement of the people who are trustworthy, who will be with you for the long term, and that you can build a business with. So for me, that's been key. Being able to trust people in business, very hard to do, but you find the right people that you can mesh with. Again, my salespeople, I probably in the last decade have gone through over 300 salespeople to have the top 40 that I have right now. And that's been the case of, you know, they couldn't get the digital world, or, you know, they're interested in selling X and not Y. Sometimes people don't get along, and that's perfectly fine. So for us, it's been it's a matter of the right person to the right atmosphere that we've created here. A lot of, you know, excitement, fun. We'd like to come to work. We'd like to the failures and the successes. So that was a big learning curve in the business world, because you're not going to like everybody you work with, unfortunately. Sorry, not every person will jive with you. Does that mean that you shouldn't work with them? Not in my opinion. If you only want to work with people that you want to personally work with, you can never grow a business to 100, 200, 500 people. It's impossible, because I know in the staff of 100, there are people there that I would not be going out every single day with for a drink at the pub, right? But does that mean I can't work with them? Of course not. You know, they're good at what they do, and that's okay. Let them do what they're good at and let me do what I'm good at. That's another thing I've learned, because sometimes I said to myself, I will never hire somebody that I can't get along with. Well, that was a big mistake. Because there were a lot of experts that I hired who were better than me in their field that I couldn't go to the pub every night with them. I couldn't. Not to say I do, because I don't. I have three kids, so I don't do that on the record. But yeah, I mean, it's just a learning curve, man. It's just a matter of curtailing your business on what you believe it to be the greatest good for the greatest number of people. And the team we've got, in my opinion, is the greatest good for the greatest number of people that we can do. And that's how we run our business.
Looking forward, what do you see?
Well, I see. I mean, it's our field is so insane. I mean, the technology. I've been to some shows with AI, artificial intelligence, machine learning. When 5G comes out, it's going to be absolute. It's going to be some insane things will happen. Then I've been previewed to a couple of technologies with the 5G network coming out, and for ad agencies, it's going to be a completely shift. I think you're going to see a massive jump in mobile consumption already to this date. There's more people on their mobile devices searching than desktops and laptops already. So I can only imagine when that technology hits, what's going to happen in that space. The technology to see virtual reality products and services. I saw one the other day, which was, you know, if you go to a jewelry store to buy a ring, and most companies have a $20,000 ring, they don't want you to put on your finger. But with your phone, literally, you take on this app, you click on that, the image with the camera, you put your finger in front of your phone, and it transported that ring onto your finger. And you did this, and you saw the ring on your finger. Like, it was insane. As one little idea of what technology can do for you. I'm bullish on that, on 5G network. I'm massively bullish in the gaming world. I think it's an untapped market, 1.4 billion gamers around the world, a third of our population games. We actually are in that space already, advertising for the gaming pockets, but I want to be the gaming agency of North America. I want to help people target that niche vertical. I think we have a massive market that is underpenetrated at a very inexpensive, cost-effective way of penetrating that populace. These are highly intelligent people who consume the internet and everything with computers. They have disposable income. The average gamer, $3 to $5 grand a year to upgrade their machines. They're not, you know, they're not poor by any stretch of the imagination. They feed their hobby. They love gaming. It's soon to be an Olympic sport, for goodness sake. You know, there are more people watching the smallest game you can imagine in a global space than there are people watching some of these, you know, huge games like, you know, NBA or NFL or hockey. It's just insane. So that vertical very, very much so excites me. I think it's a untapped market. You know, there's a lot of cool things happening next 3 to 5 years. And if, again, we're a premier channel partner of Google, and we go to these seminars in Silicon Valley, and the technology that they share with us is just mind blowing. You know, what's soon to come? Again, I don't know if I'm privy to tell you all this information because of NDAs that we signed, but it's very exciting times. I think we've just not even hit the tip of the iceberg. We're just starting to see some of this cool stuff happen.
That's amazing. Amazing, amazing. Well, Andrew, I know you're a very busy man, and you know, I'm very grateful for the time that you've shared with me thus far. It's been really fun, and I've had a lot of fun, and it's been very beautiful. So I want to say thank you very much. I do have one more question for you, then we'll go ahead and wrap it up. But what question should I be asking you that I just wouldn't think to ask?
Great question, man. That's, I can see why you do this for a living. That's a great question. you know, the one thing I would leave entrepreneurs with is, what do you ask for when you're interviewing vendors who will either make or break your business? Right? If I'm in charge of spending your hard-earned dollar to make that dollar multiply by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10x, what are the interviewing questions that a business owner, an entrepreneur should ask the rep who pitches them their product or service, right? Because majority of the times we go and see business owners, they don't even know what question they should ask us. So in our spiel, in our educational way of selling these, we actually, in our commentary, explain to them what questions should be asked, and we answer that in the same direction. So the questions that every entrepreneur, business owner should ask that advertising provider, whether it be print, digital, whether it be radio, whether it be TV, it doesn't matter what you're doing. Number one, are they accessible? Can I call you anytime that I need your help? Are you local? If I can go to a coffee shop, come to your office, are you available to me? I don't expect to be 24/7. Normal 9 to 5, 9 to 6, 8 to 6, can we talk? So if they can't commit to that, and if they cannot give you their cell number to communicate with, that should be an X. Because if I'm going to partner with someone, I want to make sure that I can rely on them. Number two, how long have you been doing this for, and can I trust you with my money, right? If show me some case studies of campaigns you were in. Doesn't have to be stellar, incredible, off the chart numbers, but real numbers, right? Can you help me grow my business? Can you help me expand my geo-targeting from one state to two cities, as an example? Reliability, how much staff do you have? Can I come and see your staff? You know, if you're dealing with a mid-sized corporation, you should be able to go to their office and see who's working what department. At least they will give you a tour of their facility. You want to make sure you're not dealing with a person who's working from their basement, right? However, I started from my basement. Not to knock anybody from starting from their basement, but don't BS that you're from a basement. Every person I pitch, I say, I'm a one-man show, but that's why I'm going to take care of your hard-earned money. It's all on me to make it successful, right? Nothing against those people, because I believe everybody should be given a free chance to do what they need to do to make it happen. But if you're talking about a larger scale, I want to come and see your facility, who you hired. They like working with you, do they not like working with you? You know, what kind of campaigns have you ran before? What are the key metrics of getting success in my vertical? I'm a plumber here in, let's say, New York City, for example. What do I need to get success? I'm an electrician in Dallas or Toronto. What do I do to get success and get more clients on board? I want my ABO to be up, and I don't want to get the bottom feeders from Craigslist or from Kijiji or something. I want to get larger ticket items. Those questions, I think if you ask them in the first meet and greet, in the first interview, you'll know in 5 minutes if this person knows what they're talking about or if they're just full of BS and the truth comes out. And often and on, when you ask the same question, if they're lying to you, ask the same question again and you'll get a different answer. And that's when you know you're not getting the right answer. Because I always tell my guys, I cannot lie. I'll tell you why. Because if I tell you a lie, you come back tomorrow, ask them the same question, I'll give you a different answer. But if it's the truth, we'll always get the same answer, whether it be today, tomorrow, 5 years from now. So for me, when I investigate new service providers, I ask them a question in the beginning and I ask the same question at the end of my meeting. If the same answer is delivered, then I know I'm dealing with a real shooter here. I'm not dealing with just some snake oil salesman trying to sell me everything under the sun. The final question that I would say is, when you meet your providers, do an audit, find out more about them before they see you. Google is all you need to get the preliminary information. In this day and age, nothing is hidden. You can't hide anymore. Everything's out there. If you're a scammer company, you just type in their company name, you'll see reports and written up stuff. If you're a legit company, you see that as well. So content is king. Research them. When they get there, ask them the questions. And I guarantee you, after your due diligence with them online and one-on-one, you'll know right away if you're a good fit. If you can't stand a person, guess what? You're not going to want to work with these guys, right? Like, for example, Ben, I didn't know you until today. We had emailed back and forth. But I really like the way you conduct yourself in these meetings. I think it's very engaging. And I've seen a whole bunch of other videos before I sat down with you. And I really liked them. I enjoyed every one of them because they provided value content that I did not know before. And if I'm willing to spend my time away from family, friends, and work to listen to something, I want it to be of value. And I think in a meeting with your provider, if you get that value proposition, it makes sense, you're not getting ripped off, and you're getting value, and you trust that person, go with them. Your gut tells you go with them. So I would definitely promote that as as the ethos of this whole world of digital advertising. If your gut tells you yeah, go for it. If your gut tells you something's not right here, trust me, your gut's right.
That's amazing. Well, again, Andrew, thank you so much for being on the show today and for sharing this time with me. I'm very appreciative. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. My thanks to you and your whole team. I think it's a fantastic job. Again, thank you very much for everything you provide us today as well.
Thanks again. And everybody's watching and listening, thank y'all. Y'all are the reason that I do this. So thank you for sticking with us till the end. And I will see every single one of you on the next episode. Take care now.